Welcome to the Invest with Clarity podcast, where you will learn how success in investing, as in life, is the result of absolute clarity. Mark Pearson of Nepsis in Minneapolis, Minnesota, shares his passion for portfolio management and commitment to transparency and communication to allow investors to fully understand what they own and why, bringing them to clarity in their investments. And now, here are your co-hosts, Matt Halloran and Mark Pearson.
Hello and welcome to another Invest with Clarity podcast with Chuck and Mark. Today, we're going to be talking about the lost art of investing. Now, this is a two-part series, so I want you to everybody to pay attention to that. So not only are you going to listen to this one, you're definitely going to want to listen to the next one because we're going to be diving into some very interesting topics. Chuck, take it away.
Hey, Matt, thanks so much for being with us. I'm really excited to do this two-part series here with Mark. And I'm going to do a little more in the beginning here by reading a couple of statements. Some of the great, I'll call them godfathers of our industry, Warren Buffett, Peter Lynch, Howard Marks, have all related the investment industry and what we do as being much more art than science. And I think with the onslaught of artificial intelligence, generative learning, and just robotics in general, that many people are pushing aside the need for not only advisors, but portfolio managers. And we think that that's so far from the truth. So we're going to spend a little time talking about the art of investing, what it is, how we use it, how important it is. And then we'll get into part two. We'll talk a little bit about some of those ETFs that have been launched that use machine learning and how woeful their performance is. So I'm going to start off with a quote here and going to read just a little bit from Howard Marks. Again, great hedge fund manager, been around for 50 plus years. He says, investing is much more art than science. And it's an intriguing statement, but what does it mean? So typically we associate the, if you will, the concept of art with things like creativity, imagination, playfulness, amongst other things. On the contrary, right, the word science immediately evokes beakers and lab coats and cold rationality, right? Beginners tend to believe that investing very much belongs in the latter category. And we just think that that's incorrect. People think of investment bankers and hedge funds aren't populated by poets. But the art of investing is, I think, something that's a long lost art and something that we can speak to here and how we use it. So Warren Buffett, certainly in his letter to shareholders, which he just did about 3 weeks ago, way back in 1989, I should say, said, it's far better to buy a wonderful company at a fair price than a fair company at a wonderful price. So what he was basically talking about, there's a lot of nuances to investing that don't show up on balance sheets or financial statements. The value that a company possesses, kind of the popularity of its leaders, just having a feel for that operation. And not only just the operation itself, but actually comparing it to the competition. Peter Lynch, who Mark and I have used many times, he was the famed investor of the Fidelity Magellan Fund, said this. He says, as I look back on it now, he said this a few years ago, he's since been retired. He goes, it's obvious that studying history and philosophy was much better preparation for the stock market than, say, studying statistics, quote unquote. And I love this, investing in stocks is an art, not a science, and people have been trained to rigidly quantify everything, have a big disadvantage. And that's that key. And I'm going to pass it back to you, Mark, here. I'm going to ask you, I'm going to take some quotes that actually Lynch said in his book, and I want you to reflect on these. So I think you're going to nail these, and I know that you will, but I'm going to read the quote from Lynch, and then I want you to kind of speak to it, if you will. So because I know you talk about this all the time. So here's the first one. Building a valuation model is a science. Calibrating it to reflect the psychology of uncertainty is an art. Again, building a valuation model may be a science, but calibrating it to reflect the psychology of uncertainty is an art. So tie those together, Mark.
And wow.
Yeah, isn't that pretty big?
Wow. Okay. Well, there are several things that come to mind as it pertains to the idea of building an evaluation model and it being a science. I've often said that that investing is an art and a science. We came up with the acronym SMART, SMA for an SMA, and RT, A-R-T, as an art, SMART investing. And the reason why we did that was I believe that investing was far more of an art than a science. And what I mean by that is, number one, valuation of a business is relative. I tell this to our advisors and clients all the time. Valuation of a business is relative. It is never absolute until the company has been fully bought and paid for and it's gone. That's the price that's absolute. Until that point happens, if it does happen, everything else is relative, which means you can build valuation models all you want. The problem is the variables of how those models are built change darn near every day, if not every quarter or every year, because you have black swan events. You have expansion of your economy, contraction of your economy. You have different areas that become more important, i.e. now everybody is talking about AI, and is a company like NVIDIA overvalued or undervalued? At the end of the day, no one is smart enough to say a stock or a business is overvalued or undervalued. The only way you manage a position like that is by having your buy discipline and your sell discipline. This is why we go back to our four keys to successful investing: philosophy, strategy, flexibility, transparency, and throwing those into your buy and sell discipline. When you talk about valuation being a science, there are certain metrics that a money manager and our firm certainly uses as it pertains to the valuation of a business. But at the end of the day, it is the art. It is the precision. It is the passion of the artist that takes those variables and, i.e., paints the work of art, looks at those businesses and the asset allocation. This is obviously a much deeper, bigger thing than what people really understand. So, Chuck, I appreciate the fact that you give me the hard question. Building an evaluation model is a science. Calibrate to reflect the psychology, uncertainty is an art. Now, before I throw Chuck back in here, let me make one last point. I think it's important for investors today to understand that investing is very different today than investing was in the 1990s, 80s, 70s, 60s, and 50s. With the growth of mutual funds, with the growth of ETFs, investing now has become far more cookie cutter. It has become far more revolving around modern portfolio theory, which many people understand who follow our podcast, we don't believe in. And portfolios have become over-diversified, over-allocated, with a massive sense of a lack of clarity. And today's investment world is very different than it was before. And we need to get back, guys, to the art of investing.
Mark, love that answer. This is going to take us right into the next one here, my friend. And I think you're going to love this one. So getting information is science. Here's the key. Filtering out noise is an art. Filtering out noise is the art. Talk a little bit about that and how we do that in our process.
Welcome to the world of investing with clarity. When you look at the amount of people that are paraded in front of investors to opine and give opinions, a lot of it is noise. The focus on AI, the focus on a recession, the focus on China, the focus on energy prices, the focus on this and that, they all have one thing in common. They are short-term events or short-term situations. Investing is a long-term process. Remember the difference of a situation versus process. We always say process before progress. Gathering information is the due diligence part. And the goal is to gather as much information as you possibly can. But getting back to the first point about building a valuation model, what is the model? What is the criteria that you use to make the decisions on the kinds of businesses you want to own versus the art of investing, which filters out the noise, gives you greater sense of clarity of why you're investing in the businesses that you are investing in and you want to invest in. And frankly, information doesn't mean listening to a bunch of people opine about their opinions. Information is not opinion. I should say, yes, opinions are information. But science and proving a hypothesis requires facts. And so you need to have the facts of the information you are looking at when it comes to making those investment decisions. One last point about the art. I've often said, we typically, there are certain industries we don't want to invest in. As we say, Chuck, we want to invest in great businesses long-term. And that focus many times is in very specific areas, i.e. technology, i.e. financials, i.e. healthcare. I'm not interested in owning the restaurants that are out there. I'm not interested in owning a cruise line. I'm not interested in owning businesses out there that are not necessarily going to provide me with the economic moat, right?
Right.
You'll
want to
talk the term.
Absolutely.
When it comes to the decisions, gathering that information, the economic moat is a part of, filtering through that noise and all of that other stuff, and bottom line, coming to a point of investing with clarity.
Ah, I love it. Now I got a really good one here for you, because this is kind of be a segue to when we get to part two, the next time we record, about artificial intelligence and how it supposedly is going to take over our world. So here's maybe what AI does that's good, but I think the second part is something it can never do. It says, measuring what worked in the past is a science. Understanding why things may be different now is an art. So speak to that again. Understanding why things may be different now is an art, while measuring what worked in the past is a science.
Well, remember what I said in the last statement that, you know, I did not think about when, because you actually skipped one here.
I did. That's okay.
The bottom one. We'll have to go back to that one.
Yeah.
But I'm glad you did, because let me explain what I mean by that. Remember what I said about the science and the art of investing, and that science requires facts to prove a hypothesis.
Right.
Right?
Yep. Okay.
So measuring what worked in the past is a science because it's a fact. It's already happened.
Absolutely.
So, however, history does not always necessarily mean it's going to repeat itself. I can't believe you skipped one. That's just divine intervention right there. Because, yes, measuring what worked in the past is a science because it's factual. It happened. And how many times have we heard people say, geez, we never expected this to happen. We never expected that to happen. You know, in today's market, eight stocks have driven the entire rate of return of the S&P 500 year to date. And let me tell you, while everyone prognosticated, postulated, and speculated over the last 6 months, not one person who's come on and talked about and said, yeah, you know, the top six, seven companies are going to make up 100% of the return of the S&P 500 year to date. But now that it's happened, it's fact. Because it's happened in the past, and you can, as a science, you can assess, right?
You got it.
That situation, i.e., I'm having a brain melt. What is it when you go in and you go to test tubes in science class, you do experiment. So you do these experiments and you get an outcome, right?
Well, certainly.
Well, the experiment was 8 stocks made up the total return of the S&P 500 in the last 6 months. That makes it a fact. That's a science. But nobody's going to put all their money in the top 8 stocks in January of 2023 and say, you know what? It's a fact that all 8 of these stocks are going to drive 100% of the S&P 500's returns over the next 6 months, which is why you 100% are required to include the art of investing, because it is the art that allows you to assess as things are going on a day-to-day basis, week-to-week, quarter-to-quarter, month-to-month basis, and adjust as needed for the long-term goal of what you're trying to accomplish, which is why investing is a long-term process.
Boy, I love what you just said, and it's so important, because when we meet the next time and we talk about the failures of this 10-year now launched artificial intelligence-based ETF, it just was that. It was its miscue about the Federal Reserve raising rates 500 basis points within 9 months, because it really never happened before, right? So it couldn't be calculated into it. But if you were following the Fed and listening to them and you had an inkling, right, the art part of owning and understanding companies, you may have been able to determine that you would stay away from businesses that didn't do well in rising rates or not own bonds. Wink, wink.
Well, at the end of the day, look, the science part requires fact. Okay. So because people don't have facts, what they have to rely on is a hypothesis, or as I like to say in our business, lots of stinky opinions. And at the end of the day, an opinion is all it is. Now, someone may be right about an opinion. This is why we do our top 10 predictions every year, and we're right on every single one of them, is because they're not opinions. They're not predictions. They're factual, which basically means they are a part of the science aspect of investing. They are factual in nature. The art part comes in when you include the power of clarity and the power of your investment process and the art components of investing, which some we talk about and some, of course, we never will talk about. But that's what brings it all together.
I'm going to mention something I think that is both near and dear to our hearts. And certainly that is the consumption of good and well-made and prepared food, right? Meals. And I want to relate cooking to investing. So I'm going to read about a minute long subject matter, if you will, on cooking. And I want you to relate this to what I love, Mark, that you've done with the analogy of kind of building an automobile and how that reflects something that AI will never be able to do, and which only science can attempt to. So here's what I'm doing. I'm going to read this. So take a pause. It'll take me a minute or so. I'll read a quote here from Isaac Asimov, who was a famed author. He said, "There is an art to science and a science and art. The two are not enemies, but different aspects of the whole." I think you were saying that. So the question here is, cooking an art or a science? If I have the ingredients for a recipe and I follow the directions to a T, we would classify the process as a science, right? But anyone who follows the recipe and uses the same ingredients should be able to produce a dish that tastes exactly the same, right? And you and I know that as we go to great steakhouses all over the country, right? If everyone knew how to make the steak the same, or the spinach or whatever the sides were, everything would taste the same. It doesn't. Here's the point. When I follow the same recipe multiple times, my dish should taste the same every single time. Yet the connoisseur chef amongst my readers know this theory could not be further from the truth. How about when we apply this concept to investing? So here's where we're going to go, Mark. Based on the way investing buffs talk about financial analysis, ratios, spreadsheets, and technical graphs, all concepts that lend themselves to quote-unquote precision, investment analysis seems to be categorized as a science. Most investment professionals, right, they pursue degrees and educations in learning. Why then do their investing outcomes different? Remember the famed long-term capital management, which brought together former Fed governors, economists, PhDs. Why did their famed hedge fund fail in 1998 and had to be, in essence, taken over by the Federal Reserve? So here's the ending quote, and I'm going to pass it to you. Perhaps it was because investing requires the passion of the scientist and the precision of the artist. So I love when you use that analogy of the building of an automobile and the components that go into it. Talk a little bit about that artistic ingredient, if you will, in not only producing a really good culinary, right, dish, but also in an automobile. And take that. I love it and run with it, please.
So before I do that, let me give you another great analogy going back to the steakhouse. You can get your stock, you can get your steak rare,
yeah,
medium well, or well done. Those are really the five ways a steak can get cooked. But not every chef can cook it precisely to that level every single time if they're not the best of the best. And what's almost as important is that time that they cook it over the heat is also the preparation of that steak to give you the flavor. Is it 30 days aged? Did you sous vide it? What kind of seasonings did you put on that steak? Meaning, at the end of the day, preparation, which goes back to your original point about the whole investment process and this whole idea of the science, which gives you this whole idea of building a valuation model. Building a valuation model means the preparation. The preparation is also both art and science. But when you go to the automobile, there's a Kia and there's a Mercedes. There is a Mercedes and there's a Ferrari or a Lamborghini. They all work the same. When you get into the car, you press a button. These days, you used to turn a key. These days now, you press a button and your car drives. And when you get up to the red light, you know if you press your brake, you're going to stop. At least you hope. And you can turn on the radio and listen to music, either with one speaker or 18 speakers, depending on the car you have. The point I'm trying to make there is that when you get in the car, you don't know who made the brakes. You don't know who made the speakers or the spark plugs or who made the engine block. All you know is that when you turn the key, the car should start driving. And it should be able to do all of the things that you naturally expect the car to do. But if you're missing the brakes, or if you're missing the spark plugs, or you're missing the gasoline, you are missing an ingredient that brings it all together. And the question I would ask is, do you know what ingredient is missing from your portfolio to allow it to run like a Ferrari and not a broken down vehicle on the side of the road?
Boy, you added a nuance to that, Mark, which I've never heard before. And that was beautiful. We all know that, and you've been generous to all of us at the firm here. We've tried many a steakhouse, right? And it is amazing how each one of those chefs, right, would consider them to be top notch. All have a kind of a different approach, but at the end of the day, it's determined by the person who's actually taking that bite as to whether it's met their goals and objectives, right? And the hard-earned money they spent on that steak, to actually whether it was something that they enjoyed consuming or not. And I think it's the same thing with that relationship between an investor and their portfolio manager.
100%. 100%. I couldn't agree more.
Fantastic. So let's do this. Let's end on this note here. We're going to talk a little bit the next time about artificial intelligence, and it just maybe robo-advising, right? And looking at, is this the next generation that is going to eclipse the work that we've spent our whole lifetimes doing? I want to make the case, and hopefully you would agree with this, that managing money and just speaking to individuals about their livelihoods, their goals, objectives, their dreams, it's much greater than any machine can ever calculate. It's almost like, and correct me if I'm wrong, the relationship you have with your personal physician, or for some reason you may need surgery, right? There may be mechanical components to that surgery that are needed to assist the surgeon, right? The doctor. However, at the end of the day, we want human touch. We want to speak to an individual who can share with us not only their opinions, but their passions on that subject matter. Relate a little bit and let's end on that piece here, how maybe those two occupations for whatever we see of the future will remain as something that needs to have that direct personal contact.
Well, investing, first of all, is not binary, right?
Right.
Investing is a process. We've already talked a lot about it. It's not like sitting down on a computer and programming, you know, zeros and ones. I'm not a computer programmer. I'm more of an artist than I am a scientist as it pertains to computer programming. Software. When you think about the science of investing, when you think about AI, the science of AI, it's binary, right?
Yeah.
And these machines are using binary language to make decisions as it pertains to how you should do your financial planning or how you should do your investing. But we all know that there are variables that are not included when you build that binary program. That's why software goes through updates all the time. And the only thing I would ask rhetorically as it pertains to doing an update on your binary AI application is, what happens if you make that update and what happened to make that update happen has already happened? In other words, what happens if COVID has already happened and now you go make an update to your AI platform, your AI technology, and the event has already happened, and the decisions that are going to shape the portfolio performance the next 3, 5, 10 years have already happened? You can't, if you're going to be cookie cutter, which is what the market wants, AI will have a place for those people who want cookie cutter and don't want to think about it and are not interested in maximizing their opportunities. But for people who are investors, I've never met an investor who didn't want to maximize their returns by taking advantage of financial opportunities. Financial opportunities do not happen when you're on AI platform. Financial opportunities happen by the artists assessing the canvas, utilizing their scientific models to make the decisions to paint on that canvas, i.e. potentially enhance the return of your portfolio long-term.
So very well said, my friend. I look forward to our second segment. Matt, I'm going to pass it back to you. And I think for our listeners here, we're going to have a really good understanding of what AI is, how it can be actually helpful to society. But as Mark said, at the end of the day, portfolio management for those who want direct contact, who want a direct relationship with their money manager, will not cease to exist. And I think we'll only get enhanced.
And we will find out more about that in part two of this two-part mini-series, The Lost Art of the Art of Investing with Mark and Chuck. Listen, if you're not subscribed to the show, make sure that you do. And even more importantly, share this with somebody, because I don't know if you've been paying attention. A lot of people are talking about AI and how this is going to affect the investing world. So make sure that you share this with your friends and family. So for Mark and Chuck, this is Matt Halloran. We'll see you on the other side of the mic very soon.
The content discussed is for informational purposes only. It is not a solicitation or recommendation for any securities that may be mentioned herein. Advisory services offered through Nepsis, Inc., an SEC-registered investment advisor.